The meeting to order of the Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee, August 5th, 2020. I'll take a motion to approve the July 8th meeting minutes and transcripts.
I'll move it.
Heidi second.
Okay, Dean, Heidi second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Okay. So we're going to just it depends on which agenda you have. We are moving the sheriff's presentation to the front because there are people who have to go, and we want to make sure that everyone who came to hear that would get a chance to. Juan, are you going to use, you want the screen you're going to share off, or do you want to give the PowerPoint to Jay?
We're gonna do it here.
You're gonna do it here. Okay. So while they're queuing up, this is a. I had asked the sheriff to do a presentation to the legislature to talk about how staffing works in the jail. So now I'll just leave it to him.
Can you guys see the screen?
Yes.
Yes.
I can.
Yes.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, everybody, and thank you all. It's a little bit more than just staffing. It's just the operations of the jail. And we haven't had the opportunity for the new legislators to come here because of COVID-19. And I just want to make you aware of how the jail works. I have in the room with me the superintendent of jails and the warden. And first thing I want to talk about is how bail reform has affected this facility. April of last year, the law was passed, but the judges and the courts began implementing it immediately, even though the law didn't go into effect until January 1st. So the numbers went from 240 to mid the end of the year to about 190. And then at January 1st, it dropped down to about 125, 130. And what happened after that is COVID-19. And the courts shut down. We released folks that had underlying medical conditions. And the judges in the county also did not remand anyone that had any underlying medical conditions. And I was fine with that. The numbers have been hovering about the 115, 125 pretty much ever since. The interesting thing about bail reform is that people think folks are not going to get jail time. That's not true. Just because there's no bail does not mean you're not going to go to jail. There's no more time served. And at some point when the courts reopen, they're going to have to sentence people to the county jail. And that hasn't happened. The court started reopening just recently. I spoke to the county court judge, Judge Rounds, and he says he's going to start sentencing people. And I tell you all this because the numbers in the facility have been fluctuating. And until we get the full effect of bail reform one, and of course, bail reform two, which was underlying issues with bail reform one that was changed and then the law took effect July the 1st, we're not going to get a true number, average number, for at least another year and a half. And that's important to know because the first thing everyone is saying is let's reduce the numbers at the facility as far as the correction staff. So that's why I wanted to start off with bail reform. And like I said, the courts are reopening and sentencing is going to commence shortly. So as you know, the jail is part of the sheriff's office. It's the largest division. There's 158 members and sworn members, but I'll talk about that number in a minute. And the way the staffing here at the jail works, if you have your maximum prisoner capacity, which is the beds, there's 458 beds and 12 housing units. And the State Commission on Corrections came here and adjusted it last in 2017. And that number will determine how many posts have to cover, you have to cover, and it's mandated by the State Commission of Corrections. So minimum facility staffing requirements, it's the people that are necessary to provide care, custody, and control for all prisoners, and of course, maintain the necessary facility functions. And these are mandated positions by the New York State Commission on Corrections. And it's a 24/7 operation, and you have to include days off, holidays, personal leave, vacation, sick leave, 207C, family medical. For each pod or housing facility, housing unit that we have open, it is estimated that you need 5 per position. So they have a wide range of skills and jobs that's needed to do every single day at this job. We have 6 pods, 3 dorms, and we have a classification housing, and that is when the inmate enters the facility, we have to classify him. If it's a female, she goes to a female pod. If they have a particular gang affiliation, they go to a specific general population pod. Or if they're committed a crime like homicide, they would go into a separate, segregation or discipline facility. Some of our pods have double bunking. Not all of them, but some of them do. By the way, if you have any questions, by all means, please, I can stop and I can answer your questions. Do we have any questions so far?
This is Lynn Archer. I have a question for you. Sure. If we have 6 pods open, we've got 48 per pod. That's 288 inmates.
Right.
You said it's going to take 1 to 2 years to stabilize and get a real sense of intake.
Right.
Is there any opportunity at this juncture, if we've been running at 125, to shut a pod down?
We have shut that down, and that's further in the presentation.
So you're not running 6 pods now?
We are not. We shut down 3 of them.
Oh, that's helpful. Thank you.
So the other mandated positions are escort officers, hearing officers, classification, central control, grievance, intake officer training, EEO, security, tech, records management. We have a K-9. We have a scheduling sergeant. And if someone's on suicide watch, we have to put somebody what's called a one-on-one. There's also transportation requirements that are required for if somebody goes to the hospital. Although we have a clinic here, more serious injuries, we have to take the individual to the hospital. And when the courts open up again, we have to start taking up the courts. So the corrections officer has many responsibilities. He's a teacher, he's a counselor, he's an evaluator. And these are some of the common duties that they have. They coach, they're disciplined, they're leaders. They address grievances, they maintain discipline, and they make sure that the proper supplies are in place, and they keep records and they make reports. There are also collateral duties. And these, of course, are not mandated, but as the sheriff's office, we don't have a full complement just on the criminal division side to do these details. So we have the dive team in water rescue. We have the CISM team. We have Oracle, which is our opioid responses county law enforcement. USERT, which is our Ulster County emergency response team. And we have our honor guard. And these are made up from all divisions within the sheriff's office. And these are collateral duties that some of the corrections officers are tasked with and do. So I'm gonna turn it over to the warden to talk about classification of inmates. Major?
So when an individual is committed to the facility, you must go through the classification process.
Sorry, Juan, we can't hear very well. Can you put the...
Coming over.
Okay, so when an individual is committed to the facility, you must go through the classification process. The process gathers the inmate's background information to determine where he or she will be housed in the facility. This information includes their present charge, detainers, criminal history, disciplinary behavior, bail, history of escape, injuries, mental health, any enemies in the facility, their gender, any medical issues they have, gang affiliations, and MAT, which is medically assisted treatment. So there's a process that the inmate has to go through, and that's why we have a classification housing unit. So they go to the classification housing unit for 14 days while they go through this process, where we determine where they're going to be housed in a facility for them to be safe and, you know, secure while they're here.
And those 14 days are obviously to make sure that there's no COVID-19 virus.
So the types of classification in the facility are general custody male, general custody female. These are common charges, nothing violent. Close custody male, close custody female are your murderers and your more violent crimes. Your mental health protective custody, they're more so the people that don't get along in population in general or close custody. They'd be housed in mental health or protective custody. Suicide watch, again, that's our one-on-one. So, you know, someone goes on a suicide watch, that's one officer on one inmate. And there's been many times we've had 5 or 6 inmates on one-on-one at one time, where it's been 3 or 4 officers sitting on those inmates around the clock. Housing, inmates are housed based on their classification. Regardless of the number of inmates in the facility, corrections must provide a service and must supervise the population. So, you know, we take a housing unit, general housing. If we're down to 1, we have to have a correction officer there. If it's 10, there's got to be a correction officer. If the housing unit's full, there's a correction officer there. So no matter the number.
So if there's one female, we can't put the female in a male pod. She's got to remain in a female pod, and that's got to be manned 24/7. If it's alternating gang members, we can't put those due to classification, those individuals together. And so we have to separate those.
So as he said, we had 3 housing units closed, and just in the past, we had a serious assault because we had our close custody inmates all in one housing unit. It created us to open another housing unit to split them up for the safety of the inmate population.
I don't think you can see that.
Yeah, that was just a screenshot of the facility now, the housing units, and how we have 3 closed pods, and everybody. And again, we're trying to keep some spread also because of COVID. We don't want to bunch them all up together.
And if COVID 2 occurs in the fall, like some people are saying, well, we may have an issue. We may have to spread out throughout the facility. Talk a little bit about state-ready inmates.
So right now we have no state-ready inmates, but what the state's doing is we have to have the inmates tested prior to them going to downstate. Prior to them accepting them, the inmate has to be tested. So what we do is they give us a downstate list, we move them to a housing unit, which we have to open. Like up here, there isn't one open right now because we don't have no state-ready inmates. So when they call us for state-ready inmates, we're going to move to one of the empty housing units, and they're going to be tested for COVID, and they're going to remain there until the test results come back negative, and then they're going to be processed for transport.
And I just want to jump real quick in regards to staffing levels and the housing units. When you request the State Commission on Corrections to shut down a housing unit, that's it. It's shut down. You cannot reopen that. So there's other ways around it. For example, there's presently 17 corrections officers and officers that have either retired or resigned. So a sense of attrition, we can do that, but we can't redline those positions because if we do, and we have an influx of COVID-19 and all of a sudden the courts open up and sentencing occurs, we're going to be responsible for housing. These are our responsibilities because they're our inmates. And we can't just send them to another facility. There's a hardship involved in that with the families that a lot of people don't realize. And again, we're interfering with the underprivileged of our community. So the importance of making sure that we have and we have good, solid numbers going forward before a request is made to the State Commission on Corrections. And that's another issue why I wanted to bring that up. Okay. So we are aware that the office, the numbers are down, and of course, we are not sure that they're going to stay down with the two new laws with COVID-19. And it's my responsibility, just as well as everybody else in this building and the legislature, that we're responsible for those individuals in our care. They have families, and their families are taxpayers. And until I decide that we have good, solid numbers, and we're back, the courts are open, COVID-19 is over with, and I could see some decent averages, then I will, obviously, I'll request the State Commissioner on Corrections to come in to do a review. But I am not there now, and I'm not going to be there for at least another year a year and a half. I was the one that was elected to be the sheriff. And this is my responsibility and my job, and I intend to do that. So it's important for me to make sure that everybody at least knows the situation that's going on here at this facility. Since I've been here and even before, the staffing levels have been at least 10% below the minimum staffing requirements by the State Commission on Corrections. Since the beginning of this year, we've been at close to 17%. Presently, we are down 17 people. August 3rd was the last day of the request for retirements. And there's an additional, I believe, 8 or 9, if I'm not mistaken. 11 that are gonna be retiring. And some of those people that are retiring are supervisors. We're talking one captain and 3 lieutenants. Again, these are the lifeline of an organization. That these are shift commanders that are required by the State Commission of Corrections. And I'm in the process of working with the county to get at least 2 of them replaced. And I am not asking for all these individuals to be replaced, because that wouldn't be realistic. But I am asking for the promotions and at least 2 or 3 individuals to back up those promotions. Because when you promote a lieutenant, it comes from the sergeant's rank. When you promote a sergeant, it comes from the corrections officer's rank. And when you promote a corrections officer, we have to hire one. And I'll talk a little bit about the process of hiring as well.
Juan, can I just ask you to the last 2 bullets to explain the numbers in parentheses, please?
Sure. So the actual staffing levels are supposed to be, if you look at the first bullet, the 8-to-4 shift is supposed to be 60. We have 51 working that shift. The 4-to-12 shift is supposed to be 53. We have 43. The 12-to-8 a.m. shift is supposed to be 35. We have 30. And these are the numbers that were down below 2 lieutenants, 2 sergeants. Actually, per shift, there's 2 supervisors for the day shift, 2 for the afternoon shift, and 1 for the evening shift that were down. And those are the numbers that I need to replenish to make sure that it takes time for these people to get trained. I'm going to touch on the administrative staff.
So the administrative staff, that's not people sitting in the upstairs office. There's correction officers that they work 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, and they don't need that full-time coverage factor where it would be 5. So there's 11 of them total, counting the 3 in the administration, that it's a 9-to-5, 8-to-5, 8-to-4 job where they don't need to be replaced if they're not here. If they're not here, we don't fill the position.
The reason why I brought that up, because we got what's called mandatory posts and mandatory overtime. So we've been running into, because of the shortages of personnel, overtime. So if you work a midnight shift, there's a strong possibility that you're going to be mandated. You can't say no. If you're working the midnight shift and you're mandated to work the day shift, you have to work it. So there's some individuals that are working 16-hour shifts 3 days in a row because of our staffing issues. The watch, and speaking of the lieutenant, the watch commander is required by the New York State Commission on Corrections, and that's the rank of lieutenant. And like I said before, the assistant warden is going to leave. We're down 2 already retired, and 1 is going to retire that took the incentive. Again, our fear is that the population is probably going to increase due to the courts not being open, COVID-19, and the sentencing of individuals. So that's why I wanted to have this opportunity to talk to you folks. One last thing. We are responsible for our prisoners. They're from our county. The New York State Commission on Corrections are just not going to give us a substitute jail order to send people to another county when we have an operational facility here. And we also have an obligation to the taxpayer. The family members of people that end up in our facility are taxpayers as well. Some of the other details that came up due to COVID-19, we have a corrections officer that's on 24/7. So when you walk into this facility, you're going to get your temperature checked, and you have to wash your hands. And that's done 24/7 for everyone else. There's a reason why we have zero cases here, and it's because of the strict protocols we put in place right after the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in the county.
Okay, huh?
So we have we also have virtual court, and that we have two officers that do that, and that's a 24/7. If somebody in a local police department makes an arrest, and the majority of the folks that come here for these virtual courts are people that may be remanded, so they bring them here, and we have two officers that have been trained to do the virtual courts. We have two officers that have been assigned with the emergency management folks to issue masks and equipment, and that happens 3 days a week. Previously, we had four officers working the midnight shift, protecting all the equipment that the county had set up for our COVID test site in Ulster. We still have an officer that's responsible to run the test kits up to Albany. I talked briefly about mandatory overtime, but I want to hand it over again to the warden, because he deals with it more than me on a daily basis.
As the sheriff spoke earlier, you know, unlike other occupations, we have to fill the post. So when somebody calls in, we can't just say, hey, you know, we don't need an officer there tonight, we'll leave it open. We have to fill it. And what happens is sometimes it can happen for a 4 to 12 shift, it can happen 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So your officers working are given short notice that they're stuck because there's no overtime. You know, nobody wants overtime, so it goes to mando. The biggest one is our midnight shift going into day shift, because there's so few officers on midnights. Is they've in the past, and it's starting to pick back up, they've been stuck basically 16-hour shifts two and 3 days. So they work midnights, went 8 to 4, went home, come back for their midnight, and then they got stuck again because the mando went around again because we didn't have the staffing on day shift for it. So those officers, you know, there was a burnout period, and it puts a lot of stress on the officers' morale, health, and well-being. You know, it creates sick time call-ins, which again kind of creates the overtime in the mando, family and health issues, and it just doesn't help for the longevity of staff. They look for other jobs.
And then what ended up happening as well, the months of July and August, it's vacation time, and these are contractual obligations where people have to go on vacation, and so those posts have to be covered. So I want to talk about the hiring practice. Usually when the test is put out, about 350 people take the exam. This last exam, 39 candidates took the test. That's it. And we had just recently sent letters out to Canvas. We set up an agility test to make sure that they pass, and they get two attempts to make sure that they pass that test. There's also an interview and a background process. There's a physical examination, a psychological evaluation. All that information takes up to about 4 months. Once we get them and we do hire them, we still have to put them to the academy. And it takes almost 9 to 10 months, almost a year, before they're actually working in the facility. So we had the previous list expired once the new list came out. We had potential candidates that we could have hired, but now because there's a new list that came out, even if we just did send out the captaincy letter, it's going to take 4 to 5 months to even hire people. And a lot of the folks that take the test don't really read what the prerequisites of the job is. I mean, they have to pass the background. They have to pass the psychological. They can't have a criminal history that's going to obviously stop them from getting a job like this, because it is a jail. It is a facility. And their responsibility is going to be to take care of people that committed crimes.
What's that? I love you.
I love you too.
I love you too.
Oh, I'm talking to my cat. I'm sorry, Sheriff.
That's quite all right.
I'm talking to my cat.
Can't take things too serious, and I know that we all do, but thank you. I need a little humor now and then. So, and I talked about that. We get a lot of folks that take the test, process, go to the academy, and next thing you know, they say, hey, this job isn't for me. It's not an easy job to sit and watch people nowadays. It's a tough job. So because of the incentive for retirement, we've lost, like I said, two already. We have another one that's leaving, and next year we're going to lose the captain, who's the assistant warden. That's a huge vacuum of leadership and corporate knowledge to an institution like this. And to train people to get them up to speed is not an overnight job. It takes time. And we also have a sergeant that's retiring. I think that's two sergeants that are gone. And I believe we also have two corporals. None of these positions have been filled. Again, I'm working with the county to get them filled, but because of the hiring freeze and the promotion freeze, it's beginning to be an issue back there. And again, we are subject to a liability. If there's an issue that occurs back there because we don't have the proper leadership, we can get sued. And remember, there are also unions here, and there are, the unions can put in grievances in regard to staffing levels as well. I want to talk briefly about the inmate board-ins. It's true that Greene County pulled them out when I took office, and I'm not going to get into how or why that happened, but I think most folks do know. But there is a new sheriff there now, and the new sheriff has assured me that with the relationship that we have, because we were both previous state police. Can somebody mute, please? Can we mute somebody? I hear a lot of background noise. Thank you. So he was a previous member of the New York State Police, and I know him when I was a young trooper. And so we have a new relationship with Greene County, and he's already has one person here. We expect to get several more within the next couple of weeks. As you know, Greene County does not have a jail, and they're building one now. So we expect to get more board-ins from Greene County. Within the last 3 weeks or so, the U.S. Marshals have reached out and said, because the same issue that they're having, we had with the state inmates. We were not allowed to turn over state inmates to docs until they were 14 days quarantined and to make sure that they didn't have COVID-19. Being that we have zero cases, we coordinated with the Marshal's office that, yes, we can definitely house them. And looking at the crunch that the county is going through right now in regards to budgetary concerns due to COVID and sales tax, I made the decision that this is going to be good for us to at least bring in some revenue with the space that we have. So presently we have 29 Marshals prisoners. These are sex offenders, weapons charges, drug charges, fraud charges, human trafficking charges, and assault charges. I want to make sure that everybody understands that these are convicted individuals in court that are being transported. Eventually we transport them to the airport and they're sent to federal prison. These are not immigration detainees. These are, again, convicted folks in court by a judge. The cost of that is $102 per inmate from the Marshals, and for each corrections officer that we usually send two to the airport with a Marshals inmate when we make that transfer after, and it's been like 14 to 21 days that they've been staying here. Initially, it was going to be a temporary setup of about a month, but now it seems that it may be longer, and with the potential of COVID-19 phase two in the fall, this may go through the end of the year. Again, the one thing I didn't say about the corrections officer, it's $33 an hour per corrections officer that does the transport from the Ulster County Jail to Stewart Airport, where they're loaded onto a federal plane and they go to federal prison. We also have a Dutchess County inmate at $90 per day, and we have a Greene County inmate, $70. And so far to date, we have it's about $159,000, like you see in the slide, for the board-ins. I just wanted to say one last thing about the corrections division. First and foremost, we had zero cases of COVID-19, and that's due to the leadership at the jail, Colonel John, the warden, and the entire staff in the corrections division. These are folks that live in Ulster County. These are folks that are taxpayers and raise their families here. And a lot of them are concerned, obviously, with what they see in the news. And of course, the anti-law enforcement sentiment also reaches them. And I'm very proud that they're such hardworking individuals. And again, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't have these issues with COVID-19, because we have zero, and they do a hard job, and they're faithful workers, and they're our fellow neighbors, our friends, and some of them just look forward to coming to work and to get the job done. Okay, I guess that's it. Does anybody have any questions?
Can you take the slides down so we can see everybody? That way I can see if people have their hands up. Please. Thank you, Sheriff.
Thank you. Hold on.
Nope. Okay, so Jonathan?
Yeah, I just had a quick question for the sheriff. Thank you for the presentation. I was wondering, so the 29 federal inmates that were housing, are they required to be housed separately from general population, or are they housed within the normal jail set as if they were county inmates?
So when they initially get here, they have to go through the 14-day quarantine. Mm-hmm. It's a requirement. And then we put them in general housing.
Okay.
According to our classifications.
Gotcha.
Other questions? Al?
Sheriff, first of all, thank you. It's a great presentation you did. You mentioned that when you have to take marshal inmates to the airport, you have to send two officers. Are those costs and expenses charged back to them as well? Or is that included in that $102 a day?
No, it's $33. It's additional. It's $33 per hour per corrections officer.
Thank you.
So I have a question. Have you had conversations with Dutchess? I'm not sure who else is sort of within a reasonable proximity about coordinating space for efficiency. So, for example, if each jail has a very low number of women, would it make sense that one of the jails only has a women's pod, that which ensures the best services, medical services to them, and creates efficiencies rather than two that have smaller, and maybe with some of the other, I don't know, other categories might fit into that, but have you ever kind of explored that opportunity of efficiency of space with, at least with Dutchess?
No, and each county is responsible for their own inmates. In order to do that, you would have to get what's called a jail order, substitute jail order to board out. And they do not do that if you have an operating jail. The other thing, when we say that, we really have to think about the people that are from Ulster County. Now you're asking taxpayers that their kids, it's not any fault of their own, that they have to travel to Dutchess County to visit their loved ones. And most of the people that we're talking about are probably underprivileged. I think that's just an undue, issue for the taxpayer and people in the county. And I just don't think that's a good idea. Regionalizing, I've heard the talk, I know it sounds good and it sounds cost effective, but there's a couple of things here that we have to think about besides that. Number one, we have to transport people outside of our jurisdictions. If there's any accidents, we're talking about potential lawsuits. And again, like I said a minute ago, about family members now have to travel even further to go visit somebody when they can visit their loved ones right in the county that they pay taxes for and that they're from. And those are my concerns about regionalizing jails. And again, we're responsible for our own people. Why would we give our responsibility to another county is beyond me. I wouldn't do it. And I'm just right. not.
Well, just to clarify, I mean, there are people in Ulster County who might live actually closer to Dutchess jail than they do to Ulster jail, depending on where they live. But I mean, again, the concept is regionalizing for better services. So not just for efficiency, but we don't have to get into it right now. I'm just, you know, exploring this option of making more efficient.
And it's a good question. I just wanted to answer it the best way that I can. I'm sure the warden has a couple of words.
Just a couple of years ago, they did do a study on regionalizing jails. And like the sheriff said, you know, you have the other issues of the correction officers at the facilities, the sheriffs. You know, the jail is their bread and butter, basically, and the sheriffs aren't wanting to give that up. But also the bargaining units of the unions of the correction officers put up a wall because, you know, it's also costing correction officers jobs by doing that, by regionalizing.
And the other concern as well is I have different policies in the Ulster County Jail than the Dutchess County Jail has. They're not the same policies. You know, I have an EEOC policy. I'm probably the only one in the region that has that policy. And so it's about taking care of our own people here in our own county and being responsible to our own taxpayers.
Other questions?
Yeah, may I?
Yes, please.
Sheriff, just as John Parody, just, I mean, you mentioned taxpayers and taxes before, and it's a tough job. And the guys that have the forced mandatory overtime, it gets difficult and gets very expensive. There's no savings with that. Just curiously, though, are there any other boarding opportunities, not only just for revenue, but for job security? Are there any other ones that you can think of where we could bring some folks in?
So I'm working the phones. I mean, I got Greene County coming in. They're coming back. You know, we got the U.S. Marshals with their federal prisoners here now, and that could expand. That could be a bigger number. It's 29 now. Who knows what it could be? And we're in between both airports, which is we're right off of the thruway. You got the Stewart Airport, and you got Albany County Airport, and they're within 45 minutes. And so the U.S. Marshals have never used this facility. Now they are. And I'm pretty happy that they're here. And they know what the deal is. They know what my stance is on ICE and immigration. These are convicted folks that are court ordered to prison. This is just a stop. They get their 14 days of quarantine. They make sure they don't get they don't have COVID-19, and then they get shipped out to their final destination, wherever federal prison it is. And of course, I'm always looking for opportunities. If another facility can't house people, that if it's going to work for us here in Ulster County, I will most definitely bring them in.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Al. Sorry.
I have one more question for you. Is there, and I know you're probably controlled by the CBAs, but is there anything where there's shared, cross training between the road patrol sheriff deputies and the corrections officers, where like for transporting patients, the road patrol could do it versus, to utilize the manpower maybe in a more efficient way is what I'm getting at.
That is something that I guess happened years ago. These are separate civil service exams now. There are two separate jobs, and like most unions, you have to, and contracts that you sign, labor agreements, you have to adhere to those agreements. That's like saying, why don't you come over to my office and I'll train you to be a sheriff for 2 months so I can go on vacation, and I'll take your job for a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? So it's just not something. I mean, are there things that they do together? Yes, some of those collateral duties they do together. And there's a reason for that, is because I don't have the manpower to have an entire in-water rescue team. I don't have a manpower to have enough people to have the Ulster County Emergency Response Team. So that's why there are some that are on both teams. But as far as doing corrections job or, look, if there's an emergency, anything can happen. But for the purposes of contractual obligations and civil service, I can't do that.
All right. Any other questions before we move on? Thank you so much, Sheriff, for sharing that. I know I'll probably speak for the rest of the committee that it was very informative and helpful. Hopefully you're staying on because we have questions with you related to resolutions. Okay, so we're going to move on to resolutions. The first resolution is resolution number 267, approving a home rule request for Senate Bill S8546 and Assembly Bill number A10616, authorizing the County of Ulster to elect to reopen the provisions of Section 552 of the Retirement and Social Security Law. I guess, is Mario not here?
We'll see you later.
Oh. John, you're here. Is Mario here too?
Mario's right here.
He's with me. Oh, you're together. Okay. So Mario and or John, do you want to give a little background?
I can give a little background on this.
Yes.
Please. If it's good with you guys. So please. I had sent out that email, but basically this is an issue that involves three of my members currently where an unintentional error occurred. I'm not willing to point blame at anybody for that error because I don't know enough information about how that came about. Historically, it was in 2007, and if I mix up my dates, I apologize. 2007, I believe we switched from a 25-year retirement to a 20-year retirement. In the melee of that switch, two of my members were placed in a 25-year retirement when they should have been placed in a 20-year retirement. We've been trying to fix that error ever since. The other member that was affected was a transfer from the county jail into the criminal division, and in the mix of it, his transfer paperwork did not go smoothly and he was missed and left in the corrections retirement system rather than put in the 20-year deputy retirement system.
Just so, because he didn't state the differences in the 20 and 25 year and what happened in 2007. What he meant to say is that the corrections are a 25-year retirement system and the deputy sheriff is a 20-year retirement system. And that mix-up occurred at or about 2007 when both groups split into the different retirement systems.
Yes. That was even before my time here. I was hired in 2008. So some of that I'm not super well versed in. So we've been working. Personnel has tried to correct this issue. My members have been back and forth with them and they've submitted requests to change and it's come back denied because that 1 year open enrollment period had expired. We're learning. We're doing it better now. It took a long time to get the correct response on what needed to take place. And that was one of the emails that I sent to you guys with the directive from Elliot Auerbach. It was super helpful because it was the first time we had gotten an answer on what needed to be done in writing that we could actually follow. If you've ever had experience with calling New York State Retirement, and I'm not trying to dig on them, but for my own self, I've received probably three different answers on how to transfer my Saugerties Police part-time hours into my sheriff's retirement system. And one was it wouldn't apply at all. The other was it's not worth applying. And when I went there in person, the gentleman behind the keyboard typed a couple things and I received an extra 4 month service credit. Stuff like that happens all the time. I don't believe it's intentional. It's just, this is one of those situations that requires an extreme amount of effort, a legislative bill passed by the Assembly and the Senate, and that's why it's come to your attention for the home rule.
We have an estimate of the cost of this change. Yes. Should it pass? Can you talk about that?
So the past service cost, I like to consider it the deferred cost, is $260,000. Now, I know that number is big, so I've been working with Evan Gallo and
representatives up at New York State Retirement. Regardless of the language that is on the resolution, the legislative language for the immediate payment of $260, we've confirmed that there is a law in retirement and Social Security under Article 14B, Section 560. Any past service payments required by a county that adopts the provisions of this article may be paid over a period of 5 or 10 years determined by the county. So if the county should see fit to finance it for 5 years, the approximate payment would be $59,100 per year. If the county wanted to finance it for 10 years, they could finance it for approximately $34,400 per year. In addition to that, the cost of having my members now in the correct retirement system would be an additional $19,000 per year fluctuating based on salary and things like that.
So to be clear, this resolution is to approve a home rule request. Should it pass, what would happen is that would go in front of the Assembly and the Senate, who then would make their own decisions whether to approve or deny it. And if it passed both, it would be up to the governor to make the decision whether to approve or deny it. So I just want you to all understand what the resolution in front of us is. Any questions that anyone has, or John or Bert, if there's any additional information you want to provide at this point?
If I may.
Go ahead, John.
Mario, thanks for that. Mario and I have worked together on this as well for the last, oh, God knows how long, 2 months trying to get some of the paperwork. I was able to connect him to Elliot up at OSC, and they've been very helpful. And about an hour ago, we did get a letter from OSC, state and local retirement system, confirming essentially what Mario just said, that in law, there is the ability to defer the payments out to 5 or 10 years. Just to be clear on that point, there is about a 4% interest rate attached to that. The numbers that Mario had do reflect that. So that is built into the law. The one thing I would ask after discussions with Dean McGee just on this resolution before us is that the word immediate be removed from the financial impact. Essentially to keep us from potentially pigeonholing us into a one-time payment if that's so chosen by the county. Otherwise, our attorney's office is comfortable with the resolution being the mechanism necessary for either an immediate 5-year or 10-year payout if the legislature so chooses.
So I'll take a motion to discuss, which I probably should have already done. Is there a motion to discuss?
I'll make that motion, Heidi.
Heidi, second. Anyone?
I'll second it.
Thank you. Okay. Jonathan?
As a former classmate of Dean McGee, I'll make the motion to accept that amendment.
Thank you. A second?
I'll second it.
All in favor of the amendment? Of the.
Aye.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, any other discussion on this resolution?
Move it.
Okay, so all in favor of resolution number 267?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? All right, thank you. Next we have resolution number 272, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter a lease with CPR Associates LLC for public defender office space from the Department of Public Works. I'll take a motion to open for discussion.
I'll make that motion, Heidi.
Heidi, second. Jonathan, okay. Any discussion? So this is to expand the public defender's office. I had put in a request to see the floor plans. I guess my one concern, or not concern, I just want to be clear that if the goal is to expand to hire more public defenders, which I strongly support, I just want to make sure that we don't discover later that we didn't consider ensuring that there's the necessary privacy for every for clients with their public defenders in this new office space. I don't really know. I know that the former space did have one conference room, which and I know the public defender, the chief, had a private office, but the other space was a little more open. So I just wanted to make sure that we're recognizing that added public defenders might mean that several clients need to be seen at the same time and have the privacy that they need, and just want to know that that's just considered.
It's, we'll absolutely consider that. And I'll talk to Mark about the floor plans. I'm not sure if there are floor plans at this point available for the build out. But yes, we're working with the public defender to make sure that the space is adequate for the needs of the office to do the best they can to serve the population they serve. So that will be obviously taken into consideration.
Any other questions or comments? So all in favor of resolution 272?
Aye.
Oppose? Aye. Abstain? Okay, so moved. Next we have resolution number 276, title of an Ulster County Sheriff's Office drive van to Greene County Sheriff's Office. This is the donation of a van to Greene County for $1. A motion, I'll take a motion to discuss.
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All in favor of resolution 276?
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. Abstain? Okay. Next, we have resolution 277, authorizing a one-year extension for reporting to the Ulster County Legislature the findings of the Criminal Justice Reform Task Force. This is the task force that was formed at the end of 2019, and it's just extending the time period for the task force. I'll take a motion. What'd you say, Dee?
I'll move the resolution as is.
Okay, so all in favor of resolution 277?
Can I have a second?
Oh, sorry, I need a second, thank you. Jonathan, all in favor?
Yep.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Next, we have resolution number 280, amending the 2020 Ulster County budget, transferring the conflict defender administrator position from the Public Defender's Office to the Department of Finance. I'll take a motion to discuss.
I'll make that motion.
Second? Jonathan? Okay. So just as a background for this position, for those who aren't familiar with what a conflict defender administrator does, is if there are two clients who might be connected to each other, such as a married couple or brothers, if they both need a public defender, the public defender's office cannot provide a public defender for both people. That's a conflict of interest. So the way it works is another attorney who's not in the public defender's office is assigned to represent, to sit in as the conflict defender for one of the two individuals. This happens in a couple of different ways. In some of the courts, the judge identifies someone maybe that is familiar to the judge to do this. Also, in other of our courts, we have a relationship with Dutchess County where there's someone over there who takes the conflict cases for us, and there's someone on our side who takes the conflict cases for them. However, this is a really potentially important position because it fits into ensuring that everyone gets really good, strong counsel. And so it's fully funded by Harrell Herring, this position. And the idea is to have a particular individual who oversees this, ensures that there's a panel of lawyers that can be called upon who are skilled and able to respond as needed, and that it happens in a much more systematic way. Not to fully criticize what's happening now, but to make it much stronger. And so right now, the budget last year approved this position in the public defender's office. That is not allowed. it has to be separate from the public defender's office as well as the county council. So the idea is to put it in finance, and John, you could jump in if I'm wrong, but as a placeholder right now, because it needs to go somewhere, I will say personally, and when I've talked to other counties, it is more ideal that it's separate. It has its own department, or its own job line. It's not under finance specifically, but right now, in order to get this moving along, I'm supportive of the idea of it just sitting in finance until we can do the necessary work to create its own line. And ideally, in the future, we can expand this hopefully to a full-time position instead of a part-time position, and maybe other kinds of expansions. Anyone want to, John, do you want to add anything, or does anyone have any other thoughts or comments or questions?
Yeah, and I'm happy to answer any questions. Even I appreciate that explainer to that. Just by way of a little bit of background, I don't want to keep everyone's time. But what happened back in 1978 when the county first created public defender office, a lot of counties did as well. Reason is everyone was using assigned counsels, just assigned counsels, and the rate by state order kept going up for assigned counsel. It became more efficient, a little more controlled, and sometimes even better quality, where counties and governments could find a group of lawyers who were good and actually had passion for the indigenous community to serve in public service at a rate probably far less than what they would get hourly, and they created a public defender's office. Because of the conflict that legislator Walter just explained, there was still the need to use conflict defenders. And it's been a little questionable over the years. Essentially, a judge would pull from a pool, oh, let's assign this case because the public defender has conflict, we'll assign it to lawyer X, sometimes going through a pool randomly, sometimes in order, sometimes based on preferences for certain lawyers in certain cases, I'd imagine. So here, this administrator is trying to make that process actually more independent, run professionally by somebody who would be, who has to be a lawyer, who has to understand the legal systems involved. Here would be mainly criminal. Somebody who could also do things like create training programs for the lawyers who are in the panel. They would still be the assigned counsels, mainly just people who are in private practice, and then agree to take the hourly rate at the state rate to pay cases. And they would essentially create a felony pool of lawyers, a misdemeanor pool, or a pool of lawyers for potentially family court cases where there could be conflict, or immigration law cases as well. And that's it. I don't want to go too far. I know we've got a long agenda ahead, but that's pretty much the long and short of it. Here we need it. It has to be completely independent from the public defender. And the county attorney's office also prosecutes cases against the public defender in family court matters. So couldn't be there, which would have sort of made sense as a lawyer. But finance does process, I think, about $1 million a year in 18B fees, so it gave it a little bit of synergy, a little bit of reason to put it there for the time being. And at some point, yes, this is worth revisiting.
Thank you. So I would be very happy to work with anyone who's interested in really helping define and mold this role going forward after this. But at this point, we're just voting on the resolution to get it out of the public defender's office into finance so that they can proceed. There is a job description. John, was the new job description sent around to everyone? Or Jay, was it anyone?
It's in the packet.
In the packet.
Okay. It's so, the second one.
Yeah. Right. Eva, sorry, this is Bert. The first one I sent was just a sample from Oils, and then the second one was from the county's kind of job description.
So the second one's the one we're going with.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Any other questions or discussion? Okay. All in favor of approving resolution number 280?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Okay. Next, we have resolution 287 approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered by the county for Hudson Valley Fire and Safety for
Yeah, I want to go to the town board.
Motion to discuss.
Signing too, it's on the web.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Jonathan, okay. Does anyone need any background on this, or is it pretty self-explanatory? Do you have any questions about it? No? Okay, all in favor of resolution number 287?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained?
Aye.
Next, we have resolution number 292, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county for the security scan. Motion to discuss.
I'll make that motion.
Second. So I did have a question, and I let John know, and I believe he talked to the sheriff, because when I read the original contract, I thought when I read the original contract that the first year of support was included in that contract already, so I wasn't sure. This seems to be for a year of support, and I wasn't sure if that's a double or if it's for the following year. So I don't know who wants to talk to that.
That I would ask the sheriff if that we chatted about this quickly a few days ago. If sheriff?
Yeah, I believe this is the live scan, and I'm pretty sure it is live scan. We got a $70,000 grant. Initially, we had put in for $175,000, which included the training. Because of budget constraints, we decided that we're going to do it in-house, and we reduced that request to $115,000. I think this is just approving the contract. I think everything's already done. It's just that because it's over $50,000, it's got to be approved by the legislature.
So we didn't already approve this contract for the overall live scan? Because I remember us approving a whole live scan contract.
Yes.
So we did approve the contract. I think this was approving, the way I read it is it's approving the service that is provided by the company.
That's not what I was told. I thought this was just the contract was being approved. I think everything was, because it was a grant, we had to approve to submit for the grant, and that this is just the contract that was just being approved.
Right. And again, I thought that we already approved the contract.
The next one's
John, did you look into this to see whether this is separate from the contract, the live scan contract we had already approved?
No, I didn't. I did contact the sheriff, though, about this question.
I guess that, I mean, to me, it's an issue because the way I read it, it does say, and I don't know if anyone else had looked at it, that it's to provide support for the live scan. Sorry, go ahead, Heidi.
Support and maintenance services.
And then when I look back at the contract we already approved, included for the first year only was support maintenance services only for year one. And so then I didn't know if this was to cover year two. So I'm still a little confused about
it. I think it's just year one. I was told that this was the contract. It was already approved, but because it's over 50,000, contract management has to send it to you to approve because it's over 50,000.
Jay, do you have recollection of us approving this contract already? Because I thought we did.
The background that I compiled was the first resolution regarding LiveScan was establishing the capital project, which is solely establishing the capital project. Then the second, that was in June. The second one, which was also in June, was authorizing the chair to execute the agreement with DCJS.
A grant.
Involved in both of those was backup that was provided, which might be what is complicating things a little. So this resolution is executing that contract that all
I see. Okay, so
but that what makes you would have sure. seen previously included in LiveScan's quote as backup is what I think you're referring
that
to.
That makes sense because it looked like we're approving the purchase of it, but we're approving the money from DCJS, and now this is actually with the LiveScan. Okay,
this is how every capital project works.
I understand the capital project. It was the second one that, it's coming to DCJS, it read like it was an agreement with the LiveScan company, but paid for by DCJS, but now I understand.
Yeah, and the backup that is coming to mind for you was backup that was provided with the capital project from LiveScan.
Right, okay.
And the wizard left, so I think she's satisfied with my explanation.
Right. Thanks, I just wanted clarity because this is the third of the same thing, so perfect. Any other questions? Okay, so a motion to approve resolution 292?
I'll make that motion.
Second, Jonathan, all in favor? I was already voting.
Aye.
Okay. The next is resolution 293, approving the execution of contract over 50,000 entered by the county, William E. Munson, Munson Boats. Motion to discuss?
I'll make that motion.
Second, Jonathan. This had come up before, and I know John spoke to the sheriff about this. There was just this question of the portion that's covered by the state. So if you all remember, half of the whole cost was going to be paid for by, who won? Who's paying for that?
Parks and Recs.
That's the half of our half. But the first half is federal.
75%. Yes.
75%, and then of the remaining we were sharing with Parks and Recs. Have you been able to get any kind of documentation from Parks and Recs assuring?
I'm pretty sure we went through this before, and when I went in session with you folks, and I gave you a copy.
We did go through this before.
But there wasn't any documentation. You assured us that they definitely will do this, but we never actually got anything.
I think we pulled a letter from last year. For the last 15 years or so, they have been approving and doing 50% of our expenditures for our boats. And they are aware of this. We made the phone call. I don't have anything in writing in front of me here, but there's nothing there that says that they're not going to do that.
Right. I guess there's also the concern with COVID and budgeting, but I believe that we're clear that on the contract, if for some reason any of this money doesn't go through, the county is not on the line for it. Correct?
I'm not sure about that. All I know is that Parks and Recs is picking up 50% of what's left of that 75%. And they've been doing that for years. Remember, one of our boats is actually owned by Parks and Recs, the other boat.
Right. And
we have a contract with them that they will pay for 50% of any of our marine needs every year. And I know that they're aware of it. Do I have something in writing? No, I'm sure I could probably get something though.
I think that would be great, but I also, and John, maybe you can clarify, I do believe when we were talking about this at the chair's meeting, we ensured that the language is there, that if for some reason on the federal level or the state level, again, with COVID, things are a little bit different, that if anyone doesn't come through with their money, we won't owe William E. Munson a lot of money, right?
That's sure, if I may. And Brian, Legislator Cahill pointed this out, and I believe it to be the case, but I want confirmation from the lawyer's office just as you do. But I think Article 4, what's called the executory clause, pretty much says that the county would not be liable if other funding is not appropriated pursuant to this contract. I'm at this point, I'm fairly comfortable as it's in the committee process with that clause in there. I do want to, before this has a final legislative vote and signed off, I would like the attorney's office just to double check that and get something to you in the next day or two. Say
the only thing, if we could do that pretty soon, because I think there's a time hack on this too.
Right. Well, I think I mean, for me, and other people could decide, I'm okay with passing this out of this committee. I just think before it, before it gets to Ways and Means or something, that we just have clarification. And again, it wouldn't be different if it wasn't for the pandemic what's the circumstances. We just don't want to have this company, we don't want them to be hurt by us not being able to pay, and also vice versa. All right. Any other discussion? All right. Motion to approve resolution number 293. I mean, all in favor of approving resolution number 293?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? This is the problem when I read my text at the same time as talking. Okay. The Criminal Justice Reform Task Force update, it has been meeting. It has three subcommittees, one which is focusing on restorative justice, one on centralized arraignment, and one on discrimination in the criminal justice, discrimination and equity. And anyone is interested in being a part of any of those subcommittees or the regular committee, our meetings can be made available. You know, you're all welcome to come. There is the Executive's Criminal Justice Commission, which is meeting right now as well. New business, Rondout Valley has decided, this is an FYI, Rondout Valley has decided to decrease their number of SROs from 2 to 1. This is doesn't require legislative action, just wanted to share that information. Anyone have any other new business?
May I? I'm not sure whether it's new business or old business, Madam Chair. But I have read very recently in the paper where the Kingston mayor is saying that the spike in violence in Ulster County and around the area is because of the pandemic. Now, 5 months ago, almost to the day, there were those same comments in the paper and a press report that said that the agencies in the county were joining together in an effort to combat violent crimes in Kingston and announced this joint task force. Yesterday, there was almost the exact same announcement that either it was implying that something isn't being done properly, they're not cooperating. Now, I remember speaking with the sheriff on this same machine, and he very clearly and carefully stated the job that they were doing, the sheriff's department were doing to work with the city of Kingston. Bike patrols, four-wheeler patrols, scooter patrols, road patrols, the state police were working with them. And now we're getting an announcement like it's the pandemic. Last year, there were plenty of news articles that there was some real problems with violent crimes in our community and around the state. And I appreciated what the sheriff says and said and explained. And as he knows, and I know, I, by the very nature of my job, get to see a lot of folks, some in law enforcement, some in the same agency the sheriff's dealing with now, some of his former associates and coworkers, some in the rural areas, the chiefs and people, and the other volunteers, ambulance, fire, etc. And they are at a loss. They'd like to know, why is this happening? In the last year, there was basically full employment. So I think it's time that we, this committee, have hearings, bring in law enforcement, both publicly and privately, because some people may not want to say that they are, as police are trying to do their job, they're not necessarily allowed to go in certain communities. You know, they call it benign neglect. And I think as a criminal justice, law enforcement community, call it whatever you want, we have to work to ensure the public that they're going to be safe. And a number of people that I talk to in this community up here are very reluctant to go to Kingston anymore. And I think we need hearings, like I said, some in public, maybe some in private, and find out why. And I would make a motion to do that. I don't like to spring things on anybody. So I would wait till next month or do something else. But I think the chair should form a committee and work out the framework and start inviting people in publicly and privately to say, here's what I think is wrong.
I think that that's a very reasonable thing. I think, you know, while we do see the violence has increased across the whole state and across the country in the last few months, I think that getting ahead of the game might be very, very useful. And so as you said, this is kind of just coming up right now. Why don't you and I talk offline before our next meeting and explore what, you know, the details of this a little bit further, if that's okay.
And Madam Chair, that's fine. I have no interest in trying to surprise people or sandbag people, but I think it's reached a level now where the sheriff and his people have to know we're supporting them. The community has to know it, that there's an effort going on to find out why. I'm not saying we have to bring in a bunch of social scientists to tell me that I don't understand because I had the, you know, no grandparents, and that's why I don't understand people's anger. But I will do that, Madam Chair. Either you call
okay, I'm happy to
whatever.
Do that with you. Yeah.
Okay. And thank you for your time and Juan, thanks.
Any other new or old business? Okay, I'll take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? All right. Thank you all.
Adios.